You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, episode number 405. Whatever you choose for your career path, remember, the struggles along the way are only meant to shape you for your purpose. Chadwick Boseman, rest in peace.
Broadcasting from the back alley in Hollywood, it's the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, where we show you how to survive and thrive as an indie filmmaker in the jungles of the film biz. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Indie Film Hustle Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Today's show is sponsored by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, how to turn your independent film into a profitable business. It's harder today than ever before for independent filmmakers to make money with their films, from predatory film distributors ripping them off to huckster film aggregators who prey upon them. The odds are stacked against the indie filmmaker. The old distribution model of making money with your film is broken, and there needs to be a change. The future of independent filmmaking is the entrepreneurial filmmaker or the filmtrepreneur. In Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, I break down how to actually make money with your film projects and show you how to turn your indie film into a profitable business. With case studies examining successes and failures, this book shows you the step-by-step method to turn your passion into a profitable career. If you're making a feature film, series, or any other kind of video content, the Filmtrepreneur method will set you up for success. The book is available in paperback, ebook, and of course, audiobook. If you want to order it, just head over to www.filmbizbook.com. That's filmbizbook.com. Before we get started, guys, I set up a special link to help people affected by the coronavirus, and you can donate to Feed America. There is a lot of people in need out there, and Feed America is a great organization, and they're helping millions of people on a daily basis, and they also need your help. If you want to donate, even $5, $10, it goes a long way. Head over to indiefilmhustle.com/help. Well, guys, today on the show, we have filmmakers and filmtrepreneurs, Bob and Margie Rose. Now, they are the filmmakers behind the new film, Instaband. Now, Instaband is a film about musicians and how the changing marketplace of the music industry has forced them to change along with the times. And I wanted them on the show because I've been saying this for years now. If indie filmmakers want to see what is going to happen or is currently happening to the indie film marketplace, all they have to do is look at the music industry and what musicians are now doing and have to do to make a living as creators, as artists. They are on the road. They are selling ancillary products and services and exposure to them, autograph sessions, other things like that, things that are outside the music that they actually make. And in many ways, the music that they make are loss leaders. They have very little value in the marketplace, unfortunately. And, you know, they're being paid nothing for streams. I don't know if that sounds familiar to anybody on Amazon Prime right now, but that's exactly what's happening. If we as filmmakers do not change our mindsets and change the way we look at making movies as a career, as a way to generate revenue, to keep us alive, to sustain us, to support our family and ourselves, then you won't make it. We won't make it as a community. We will not make it as creators. And this episode, Bob and Margie really help us understand the struggles of what musicians are going through right now and give us a ton of ideas on how we can take some of those lessons and apply them to the indie film marketplace. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Bob and Margie Rose. I'd like to welcome the show, Bob and Margie Rose. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Thank you so much for being on the show, guys. You reached out to me about your really amazing film, Instaband, which really touches on a topic that I think is so important to today's world that we live in, this COVID-19 world, but it also was important prior to COVID-19 to filmmakers, specifically, but your movie's about musicians. But we're going to get into Instaband in a second. First of all, how did you get into the film business in the first place?
Well, I'm your classic. Grew up getting a camcorder around sixth, seventh grade. I did my first video in the sixth grade and just making videos for school through high school. Then go to college and try to make money to be an accountant. And that was 100% the wrong idea. And I got a camcorder. I almost flunked out of college from just trying to take like physical therapy and accounting just because that's what makes money. And I got a camcorder on my college break. And that was the turn right there. And so from that point on, I think that was like 90, 95-ish. Mm-hmm. And I started taking film courses and straight A's the rest of college. And that was it, man.
Isn't it funny? I did the same thing. I was like horrible in like real college. But then I went to Full Sail and I was like valedictorian. Like it just all of a sudden, everything I just started getting straight A's all the time because I enjoyed what I was doing. And how about you, Margie?
I got into film because of Bob. We got together and there was a point in time, I'm a massage therapist in my other life. And I was really slow. He was super busy. He was like, babe, if I can just teach you to do some things to help me out, then we can keep the money in-house. If not, I'll have to hire someone. I was like, oh, I'm a quick learner. Let's do it. Let's go.
Yeah. The first film I did almost killed me because I did almost 95% completely alone. And yeah. So this next one, she was helping out. It was huge. And we got our little edit desks across from each other. And
that's awesome. That is amazing. It's great when you can work with your spouse. I've worked with my spouse, not in filmmaking, but in other aspects of our lives together. And it is nice when you can work together. Now, tell me a little bit about your film Instaband. What is it about?
Okay, so Instaband is about today's music industry, but from the perspective of today's music artists, and especially the independent artists. So. Obviously, when Spotify came into the picture, CDs went away. How are artists making their money? And so that's really where it started from. This is a brand new world we live in. I truly believe that this is the biggest turn in the music industry since the beginning of the music industry. So the big question mark is in this world where nobody's buying music. How are artists making their money? And the difference are the people who hustle. Mm-hmm. So it's really about the hustle of the music artist and how they can supplement and make a living doing what they're doing when people aren't going out and buying a $20 CD anymore.
So I want everyone listening, as we move forward through this interview, anytime they say musician, just insert the word filmmaker. And it's pretty much the exact same issues that we're dealing with now. So please keep that in mind because I'm sure people are like, why are we talking about musicians? I'm like, everything we're talking about is completely applicable to filmmakers. Would you agree?
100%. And honestly, that's where the movie came from. I mean, from your podcast and listening to everything that you say in your books and on your podcast, I had a certain level of knowledge. And so when I came off of my first documentary, I was like, what am I supposed to do? I figured, what can I do about this branding and all this making money off of, you know, other revenue streams and stuff? I knew that there was something there, and I knew that that was what was happening in our industry. But then when you look at it from a music standpoint, I think it's even broader. Like everybody gets, you know, everybody kind of connects with that more because we all have a Spotify account. It's super convenient. And we love that, but most of the time you're not looking at the other end. You know, you're not looking.
Yeah, and the thing is that with musicians, I mean, the market is absolutely diluted with everybody and their mother who thinks that they are a musician, and it gives access to people who might have not had access before, and it also gives access to people who should never, ever, ever have access.
Oversaturation,
right? And that's and to a lesser degree because it's a lot more affordable to make music. I mean, music is basically a laptop, a mic. And you can make a song. You can do, you know, you could set up a nice home system fairly inexpensively and produce music fairly cheaply comparatively to making a film, where
it used to cost, you know, $1 million to produce a studio album back in the day, $500,000 a studio, just because of the studio time. And now you could do that at home, where before it used to cost $10-20 million to make a movie. Now you can make one for $5,000 or $10,000 with your iPhone, essentially. Right. So it's a lot, but there's still a little bit larger barrier of entry with film than it is with music. But all of the concepts we're about to talk about, it will apply without question. Now, can you explain to the audience how the music industry has changed from the days of even the 90s to today, and how it's affecting musicians?
100%. So, I mean, in the 90s and even to the early 2000s, I guess we'll just refer to everything as pre or post Napster, right? So pre Napster, the music industry was at its highest peak it's ever had, right? Mm-hmm. This was the TRL days. These are the
TRL.
All the boy bands, Britney Spears. I mean, they were just, money was flying everywhere. This is the $10 million music videos that they shoot for a week.
I know. I remember. I worked on some of those.
So, and so money was flying everywhere during that. But obviously, once Napster hit and kind of took that away, and you know, at the same token, there was so many more gatekeepers, right? There's so many more, the music, this was the time of the fat white music executive, you know, sitting there collecting all the cash. And honestly, a lot of musicians were getting pretty screwed, even though there was more money around. A lot of the musicians were getting screwed. So it was one of those things that once Napster came into play, and, you know, there was that kind of weird period of time, you know, where everybody was kind of scrambling to figure out what to do. And then obviously once we got the iTunes 99-cent download, I think that was the beginning of the steps that led us to music streaming and kind of where we're at today.
So then with filmmakers, that moment would be when Netflix basically showed up.
100%. But I do feel that Netflix is paying a little bit better than a Spotify. Like, you know,
it's different. Yeah, it's a different. Yeah. Well, Amazon Prime is paying what Spotify.
Right. That's what I was about to say too. You know, the a music stream pays the average artist 0.008 cents per stream.
And that's Beyonce, and that's a dude that nobody has one follower.
Right. Well, yeah. So you're getting millions of streams, and you're getting a nice little $100 check or something, you know.
And how does it work with publishing? Because there's cost of does that include publishing for the writers? Because I heard somewhere, I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard Pharrell off of Happy was streamed like 3 or 4 billion times or something like that, and he got like a check for $1,300 for publishing, not for the streaming, but the actual publishing of the music. I don't know if that's true. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I think that's a case by case basis, and sure. It's just like having a good agent, like, you know, and honestly, with the whole Taylor Swift thing, that changed stuff quite a bit.
So what is the Taylor Swift thing? Explain that.
Well, you know, I guess it was right around when we started filming. It was still poignant. A few years ago, she yanked all her music off Spotify because of kind of not getting what she felt she was due. And that was a big stink about it. There was a big that was what everybody was talking about for quite a bit. And it did change some things, but I think it changed more things for your bigger artists than it does your independent artist. But along with that, I'd say bigger, that led to the Music Modernization Act. So the laws they had in place for people to get money off of your residuals was pre-streaming. I mean, these are laws that were made in the 50s and 60s. So nobody really knew what to do or how to deal with these streaming numbers. So the Music Modernization Act came in, and that's just the beginning stages of where I think we're starting to build to where artists are going to get more money for streams and kind of just have a little bit more control over what's happening, you know. But again, you still need to have other avenues, and especially from the independent artists, because Instaban really centers in on your mid-tier band. It centers in on independent artists, not your Taylor Swifts, and, you know, because these are the people that are most affected by it.
So Margie, how are musicians generating revenue now? Like, because obviously the music is not, they're not making much money with the music itself anymore because of the technology and how things have changed. Where I've always said this example, like before, it used to cost $18 for a song. You would pay to buy a whole album to get one song, or you would sit on the radio and wait for them to play it and then hit the record button on the tape to make your own mixtapes back in the day. And then you would hate when the DJ would speak over the song, like, shut up, just want to clean. But now it's essentially free, even $9.99 a month. It's essentially free for the consumer. So how are musicians generating revenue?
You know, they're having to generate revenue by merchandise, or actually going out and performing at live concerts, doing shows. Mm-hmm. That's the way they are trying to make their money nowadays, because they don't have CDs. Also vinyls. Apparently vinyls are still really huge, so quite a few artists are still making the vinyls.
So from what I'm hearing, vinyl has actually made a comeback and has now overtaken CDs for the first time since 1984 or something like that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Record Store Day is a perfect example of that. Right. You know, it's a huge event. It's huge. Mm-hmm. It's huge. You know, and you know, another thing that a lot of artists, when you're starting to get into the let's get creative thing, is endorsements, working in with sponsorships and sync licensing. That's a huge one that we talk about.
Explain sync licensing. That's actually when they license their music for movies or TV or things like that, or commercials.
Yeah. NFL. Right. Yes. Exactly.
There's one artist in the movie, Sam Tenez. He is interesting because once we interviewed him, started learning his story, he actually makes almost all his money from sync licensing, and he's honestly one of the more successful ones of our bunch. And he doesn't go on tour. He gets it all from getting his placement in shows and commercials. He was in the Spider-Man Homecoming, commercial for international. And honestly, that applied to us, because I was like, okay, it's funny because we learned more about sync licensing for our films through their eyes than we even knew, on our own.
It's fascinating. So again, to bring it back to filmmakers, they're just looking at different ways to generate revenue, which is essentially the filmtrepreneur method, is to generate multiple revenue streams from multiple different avenues that are outside your traditional way of making money, which before was the access to music and the exhibition of the music was the way you generated revenue. And a t-shirt was like a side hustle, where now the t-shirt's the main hustle, while the music is kind of like, it's just marketing essentially. So is music becoming a loss leader? Like, is that what basic music is right now? Which is what I've been probably preaching for filmmakers. I'm like, if you do it right, give your movie away and you can build a business around everything else that you build around the movie. Is that happening in music?
Yeah, 100%. One artist, the way she put it in the film is she said, I consider my music like my business card. Like, here's my music, follow me. Here's my music, book me. You know, it's your in to, and another thing is kind of going into that. One of the other artists talks about how his music is this intro to his world. Like, they have to create a universe.
An ecosystem, right.
That you can kind of lock into their brand, basically, right? And the music is the end to get there.
Yeah, and the smart bands are doing that. They're creating merch. They're creating events. They're creating access to them. They're doing things that are just outside the norm of before. And I think access is a really big thing with musicians, isn't it? Now, like, autographs and picture ops and live, talks and things like that on Twitch and other avenues like that, is to get access to them. I think because before, to get access to any of your, imagine like in the 80s getting access to Madonna or Michael Jackson or Bruce Springsteen, like, that's not a thing. Yeah. But now, even Taylor Swift and Beyonce and Jay-Z and all those guys, access is a large way they generate revenue as well. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It's required, honestly. I mean, it's, and that's talked about quite a bit in the film, is that's what people expect. you know, from their big artists and from everybody. So for a music artist to come out and not kind of let people in a little bit, they're just kind of closing doors to fans that and followers, which leads to income. You know, when we started this, and I didn't intend to do this, but a huge portion or a huge asset of this movie is screen records from Insta stories. So I started recording all these artists that are in our movie. I started recording their Insta stories daily, and it actually became a huge storytelling part of the documentary because that's how they are letting people in. And as a filmmaker, I was like, well, I'm not in Nashville all the time, but I got this. I got this. And it actually kind of helped push the narrative of the story. Yeah. And it was because of what
So social media obviously is – it's such a big part of our world right now. Is it, it is essentially the lifeblood of the musician in today's world, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And they actually, but the thing is, and I want filmmakers listening to understand this, is that they make it their job. It's like social media is their job. Where filmmakers don't, they don't get that yet. Some do. And the ones who do are very successful. But they look at it as a job and as a lead generator, as audience building, because I guess musicians just come from an audience standpoint because they literally are playing in front of an audience. So they kind of understand that concept more, where filmmakers just like put it up on a screen somewhere and it's a dark room and you really see the group of people who are following you. But is that also a fair statement that it's a job and filmmakers should actually look at it as such?
Absolutely. Like a lot of our artists, we're talking about how they are the ones who respond to all their fans on social media because they don't want anybody else to respond to you to, what are you saying? What are you saying to my people? Like, that's not what I would have said to someone. So for them, their phones, the social media is a huge part of their job.
Yeah. One of the band members said that his cell phone is almost as important like instrument of their band as a guitar. Yeah. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. And every person I ask, because I ask every single one of them this question, how much time do you spend on social media or on your cell phone a day? Because social media, cell phones, these are all parts of the movie, like sections, and they're very important. Cell phone, social media are the two most important aspects, I think, of the whole, besides playing the music in the whole movie. And they tend to say, like, most of them spend around 2 hours a day on their social media. You know, responding, so, you know, Insta stories. I mean, one post on Instagram, that's the smallest portion of what they do. Living in the DMs, answering every single person who says something to them or says, oh, I love your music. When is this coming out? They respond to every single one of those. And you know, I think that's the aspect, like when we talk about, you know, like if you're on your Twitter, you answer every comment. I mean, especially when you're independent, especially when you're trying to come up. That's what you have to do. That's what you should do. These are the people who want to listen to your music. You need to take the time for them. And then they're the ones that are going to be there bringing their friends. And because once you get them in there, they're loyal. You know, I see people follow these guys around everywhere. And these are mid-tier bands. You know, there'll be a few people in the movie like, oh, yeah, I've heard of that one. Yeah, I think I've. But these aren't, they're not amphitheater people yet. You know,
no. They're clubs. They're bars.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. But I think what for me, that's what's interesting is that they are the ones that are going to benefit the most by what they do and not if they don't. But the main thing I resonated with was the hustle, you know, like, and that's a big factor. You know, the original title was going to be The New Hustle, you know, that's what I always call it.
Insta band's better.
Yeah, it is.
So then what, you know, in the movie, I'm sure you saw some amazing DIY distribution techniques. What are some really interesting ones that kind of stuck out to you?
Of how they get their music out there?
Yeah, like the hustle. Like, what is some hustles that you say are like, wow, that's awesome. Like, how are they doing that? Like, you know, something that just caught your eye.
Well, I think the way that they push to something coming out was nice. And honestly, I've used that quite a bit for my own stuff. Like, you know, not just the countdown, but like really unveiling and making you feel like you're with them and you're my buddy and we're going to come out with this music together, along with really branded posting that they do. Aside from that, I mean, just the way that they instantly capitalize on everything that happens with their song, like a Sync's licensing, instantly there's two or three posts from that show, and then reposting every single person that sees their song or sees their thing on the Insta stories. It really was how they're handling their social media, because I almost learned more from these music artists on how they handle social media than I did from other people kind of on how to promote my films. You know, it totally changed the game for me on how I handle the social media, because I do a social media account for each film I do, because they each one has their own audience. And so I learned the most from that, was most very impressed. Yeah.
So what are some of those tips? What are some of those tips that you learned from them as far as social media is concerned?
I think the biggest thing is document, don't create, right? Don't sweat that everything needs to be perfect. Yeah. People don't want to see that anyway. I think when things are too polished and everything's a branded, polished piece of content, especially for a music artist, there's a veil there, right? So
they're suspicious.
Well, there's like, I've got this between you and I, right?
Right.
This commercial that you, this is me, but is it really me? And some of these artists, like this one girl, Charlotte Sands, up and coming artist. I saw so much growth from her in the period of time that we did this. And she's super sweet, super cute, but she just pushes that away and she's goofy and herself. And that, I know that that part of her letting people know who she is and that she's not perfect is going to be what kind of lends her to her success, aside from the music.
Go ahead, March.
It's the authenticity, which all of the artists talk about.
Yeah.
Authenticity, just be yourself. And even with us, when we're joining different groups, more so now with our next film because we didn't know as much before. Mm-hmm. But just our engagement is huge, and people are so interested because we're just, you know, showing what we're doing. You know, we're making this film. Look it, here we go.
Yes, I think one of the bigger stars in the world, Taylor Swift, I think that's one of the reasons why she has the success that she has, because she is so authentic to who she is, and she really works hard at social media and access to her audience and building that audience up. No, I wanted to share with you, I was in Hollywood Boulevard at a film festival, and I was on the second floor, and I had a big window out to the right in front of the Chinese theater. And I'm sure, New York, they do this as well, in Times Square, where there's guys out there hustling their CDs.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You know, they're hustling their CDs. And I just sat, and I had a couple of friends of mine. I'm like, let's watch how these guys do this. It was a masterclass. It was a masterclass of hustle. Because these guys would have their CDs and they would target these tourists. And then the way they motioned and they handed the CD to them, it was in such a way that the tourists felt that they had to give them money. It was a social – it was just so wonderful to watch. And then they would like get the money. The second the money was in their hand, their back was turned and they were on to the next one.
Yeah.
It was fascinating to watch, but that's the hustle. If you're just sitting around waiting for someone to knock on your door.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, because I was filming an interview with one artist in Times Square, and I was just out there by myself for another gig. I would film as I'm traveling for other jobs. And I was just walking back by myself in Times Square, and I saw those guys in Times Square, and I was like, okay, I'm going to have this. So we had that. I mic'd the guy and let him follow. It was interesting.
It's a masterclass. They're like the hustle to sell a CD of music that no one's really listened to unless they hand you the earphones, which they used to do as well. Like they have a CD player or an iPod or something like that playing. It's a tough sell. Like that's a really rough hustle, and they just pound it. And it's a real masterclass at how to hustle. I mean, you're hustling the streets.
Yeah. And see, that's what I always used to say, especially in the beginning of filming. I would say the old hustle is selling CDs out of the trunk of your car. The new hustle is Spotify and SoundCloud. you know, yeah. And you see a lot of those same guys. I mean, go on SoundCloud. Yeah. You see that, or, you know, obviously I've joined a lot of groups because of the movie, and the way these guys are hustling their beats online is the same. It's the same hustle. It's just online now. You know? Yeah.
And they sell beats to other musicians as well. So like they'll create they'll sell their own music, but like as a, oh, here, I'll let you use it for this much or something like that.
Yeah. We put a few of those in our film.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did. Well, we had one guy who like I recorded. So one of the artists I started recording with became like a viral kind of sensation through the process of filming. Right.
Nice. And
he actually he was at Essence. Ray Wembley is his name. He was at Essence rapping on the street. He freestyles on the street. Right. Busking is what they call it. Mm-hmm. And Common walks out and he performs with Common. And it was amazing. His social media account went from 300 followers to 30,000 overnight. And he ended up on the Tonight Show and all this crazy stuff, right? So I'm like, okay, well, this is like a great story. This is exactly what we're talking about here, because the one post, one thing could really change the game, right? Mm-hmm. So we had other freestyling stuff where he was on the street, and I was like, okay, I can use that, but what is that beat? Am I going to get like nailed on that beat and trace the beat down to some guy who sold beats and bought the beat from him and they ended up buying three more.
That's amazing. Now, so the labels, what's their role now? Because before the label was the only thing, kind of like the studios were really the only thing other than some outskirt independent filmmakers. But what is their role now and how has it changed for them? Because I know they were hurting. I mean, I remember when Napster came up, I mean, they almost went under. Right. And by the way, piracy really hasn't stopped. No. It's now like, I think it was Jobs who said, you can't fight piracy. You could only compete with it. And that's what Spotify because now it's, as opposed to me going online, going on a torrent board, downloading the music, uploading it into your iPhone or your whatever. It's a long process where now you're just like, it's $10. Oh, $10. I have all music.
Right. Yeah.
Essentially. So they've now been able to monetize this. But I hear the labels are making money through streaming because they have these massive libraries, but the artists are not. But what is the role of the label now?
Well, they don't have – okay, so there's different tiers, right? First off, you had so many different music labels. And so what we're talking about is a lot of those either smaller ones either died or they got accumulated.
Either.
Or you just kind of have like the top – the big three or the big four or whatever it is. But it's under five and everybody kind of falls under that, right? But regardless, unless you are a Taylor Swift or you are – Drake or somebody of that nature, they're expecting you to come to the table a little bit more put together. Mm-hmm. They are all kind, and this is very similar to what happens in film distribution, is that you've got this film deal, but hey, we're still looking for you to pip your stuff, right? We're still looking for you to kind of come to us with something that's polished and put together, you know. So they're still there, they're still doing things, but I feel like their role has become a little bit more minor. It's shifted.
Yes.
You know, I think it's a good thing and a bad thing. You know, it's at the end of the day, it has put more money in the artist's pocket, but it's put more control with the artist. But then they have a lot more work to do too, right? You can't just do the music like you used to do. And they're constantly adapting. They're constantly shifting. These people, Sony Music, I mean, they've got some deal with Spotify where they're dealing with Beatles catalogs and people, you know, Michael Jackson, you know, like stuff that isn't even – they're not even making any new music, you know. So I feel like they do with films a lot of times is they're coming with a lot of music.
Library.
Yeah, library of music. And they're making their money off of that, you know.
Well, one of our artists recently, he was with a label before, then stopped because it wasn't lucrative for him. And recently he went back to the label, but he had more of the power. So he was able to say, this is what I want. And it was pretty much for radio presence, because how do our independent artists get on the radio? And for him, connecting with this label, but under his terms, he's on the radio now.
Yeah, so I think that...
And that also probably he's using again that music for a loss leader. So whatever, he's like, look, if you can get me on the radio, that's going to get my name out there, get my brand out there, and then get them into my ecosystem. And I got all of this that they can buy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's one of the things that the labels still hold is they still are kind of the
radio.
Radio. But then again, that's something that we talk about. Like, it's not as important as it used to be. Like, I don't listen to the radio. Like, you know, so.
If I'm in my car, and even then, I'm either listening to an audiobook or XM radio or something like that.
It's still important to the artist, though. It's super important to the artist.
Kind of like, so radio is the equivalent of the movie theater for the filmmaker.
Perfect. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like the old way of consuming the content. And it's this tradition, the traditional way of consuming the content, where now generations like you and me, that we grow up, like the movie theater, you're not a real filmmaker unless you're in a movie theater. Like the streaming thing's all nice and everything, but that's our goal. But there is also a generation coming up behind us that they don't really care. Like just I don't listen to radio. I don't care about movie theaters. There's a lot of them. Like I've gone to a movie theater once or twice, but this phone is where I consume my media.
Yeah.
Regardless if it's Apocalypse Now or the latest YouTube craze, you know, it's fascinating. The industries mirror themselves so much. That's why I wanted to kind of touch base with you about this film, because there's so many lessons from Instaban that if filmmakers watch Instaban, they just, again, replace the musician and just put a filmmaker in there. And essentially those are the lessons you're learning. Now, are musicians leveraging the streaming in other ways to make revenue? And what are some of these ways that they're generating revenue? I think I asked you already, but like specifically, like, I mean, obviously going on the road, autographs, personal appearances, access, licensing, syncing. Is there any other ways that they're leveraging the streaming platform since they're not making any money on it to generate revenue?
Those are the main ones.
Those are pretty much it.
Especially the mid tier for sure. I think a bigger artist they're going to get
sponsorship,
commercials, and but your independent artists, your mid tier, the main ones are merch, touring, and
sync licensing.
Those are your top three for sure.
Now, how are musicians making money in the COVID-19 world? Because that was the second I saw that everything shut down, I'm like, oh, no more touring. And a lot of them make their living touring. They sell their merch there. They have their access there. They do pictures and autographs and all that stuff. That's gone. So have you heard from the people in your film how they're, you know, what they're doing?
Yeah. Well,
they're making more music.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, if you guys have been if you scrolled your Facebook, everybody's been seeing these online concerts, these Zoom concerts that bands are doing, and some of our artists have done them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, you know, what they're doing now.
Right.
Almost every single one of our artists that are in the movie have done some sort of in-home concert, and they're doing, they have your little online tip jar where people can pay support, but also give them a tip if they feel like they want to. And I think that's been very interesting and nice, you know, it's because that's all they have. A lot of these people, they're just good enough where it's their day job, but they're not like raking
in the cash. Rolling. They're just you know, they're surviving. They're surviving on their art, which in today's world is a success. I mean, if you can make a living doing your art,
that's huge. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's huge. If you don't have to go to a day job somewhere and you could just do what you love to do, even if you're not rich, even if you're just making, you know, just enough to get above board, oh man, you're in much better shape than many people in this world.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, that's kind of where we settle too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, say that again.
That's kind of where we settle in on the movie is that, you know, if you most of these mid-tier artists, they fall into where they're not selling out stadiums, but they're making a sustainable living doing what they love. And you know, that's a success in itself. Yeah. You know, you could be in a cube somewhere. Would you rather make the same money in a cube or making music, you know?
So like with your films, like your first film, you know, we talked off air that you did well with it. You know, I'm assuming you didn't move to Beverly Hills into the hills of, you know, Hollywood Hills or something like that off the revenue of that film. But it was a good amount of money that kept the machine going. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
So you had a realistic understanding of what you could generate with your art, and you're making a living with your art, where I feel so many filmmakers, I'm sure you've run into them, that they have this lottery ticket mentality, that they have this I'm going to be rich and famous mentality. If I don't make $1 million off this next deal, I can't live, as opposed to what I've preached for a while. But like, can you make 50 grand a year where you live? Is that enough to make a living? Is 100 grand a year where you make a living? Then do that and then build off of that. You know, yeah. Like you're building off your library. You're like, you have one movie, then you have another and you have another, and then you start building out your ecosystem where you can have that passive revenue. I'm assuming you find that out. And also in the music side, I'm assuming they're knuckleheads in the music side as well, who think that they're going to be the next Taylor Swift or Drake or anything like that. Right.
Egos are everywhere.
So what kind of future do you see for musicians? As technology continues to change, as you know, streaming is not going away, whether we like it or not. Same thing goes for our industry. Streaming is not going away. And now because of COVID, there's so much talk about the movie theater is dead and, you know, we're going to go, you know, Wonder Woman is going to go straight to, you know, premium TVOD and all this kind of stuff, which I disagree. I think movie theaters will have a place, but it's going to change. There's no way we're going back to the way it was. So what kind of future do you see for musicians as things continue to move forward?
I don't know. I feel after COVID, I think part of it is they're going to do a little more virtual
or online,
like virtual concerts where not necessarily free, like you have to buy your ticket, maybe not for as much as a tour. But I think that's one way they're probably going to change to be able to reach more people.
Wouldn't it make sense if I'm a musician and I have a following of let's say I have a following of 10,000 people, you know, which is, on social media, that's a fairly it's nothing, but it's not nothing, but it's not millions of people. It's 10,000 people. And out of those 10,000 people, these are solid 10,000, though. These are like people who purchased or looked at my stuff and everything. But if I go on tour, there's an expense to touring. There's all this other stuff. And if I could put on a virtual concert and get 2,000 people to show up at
exactly
$20 a head, and you get some sort of special bonus online. Does that make sense? I mean, don't kill touring, just like don't kill the movie theater.
Right.
But this is another revenue. This is you can make more money and you're staying at home. And now people are also getting accustomed to it because of this quarantine. What do you think?
Yeah, that's pretty much. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I think pre-COVID and what we're dealing with right now, entertainment is the one expense that people are always going to pay for, right?
Of some sort.
I mean, in the Depression, the movie industry goes up, you know, and I feel like that's kind of in our industry as well. Mm-hmm. So if things kind of sway back to normal, I mean, and, you know, we talk about this in the film, is that people want the experience, right? Mm-hmm. So let's go outside of COVID. Let's say the future is the festival. It's the concert. It's the people don't want to buy music, but they'll pay $100 and people are buying vinyl for artists and they don't even have a record player because they want to own a piece of that artist. So seriously, like these,
because it's physical media, media. And to them, it's so novel to own physical media.
My son did that with a collector's edition BTS CD. And I was like, do you want to pop this in? I think my car has a CD. Like, no, it's good. I got it on my phone. I just want the big fold out thing. And I'm just like, you're paying $50 for this big fold out thing. So I think, and then taking that into COVID, as long as everybody is rolling with the punches on this technology stuff, because technology is the thing that's getting us through this, right? I mean, this is where the Zoom concerts and the Zoom chats and hell, the Friday night Zoom drinks that everybody's getting together. I mean, we're using technology to get through this. So I do feel this, I will say this, and I think this will happen with music. I think this will happen with our industry. And this is what I tell Margie all the time. I was like, something big is going to come out of this. And I'm looking to see what that big thing is, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, in 2007 and 8, that was when we had the big housing rollover and depression.
Yeah.
And Netflix popped right out of that. Netflix popped out of that. You know, so I think that as long as people are staying with the times and not trying to be reactionary to what's going on and thinking outside of the box, I mean, I think that's something bigger that we haven't even thought about. I mean, people talk about virtual reality concerts. I mean, that's definitely going to happen with or without COVID.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the future that's starting now.
Yeah, it's really interesting how the music industry is basically a complete blueprint of what happened to the music industry is happening in our industry. It's a little slower because we're a bigger machine and there's bigger parts moving as far as product and so on. But you know, I really wanted to have you guys on the show just to kind of bring this to light very clearly. I've seen this. I wrote it in my book. I have a whole chapter about how the music industry handled this, and it took them forever to even find a way out. And now they found out a way to screw the artist. They will always find a way to screw the artist. They've been screwing the artist since Van Gogh, since the first cave painting.
Sure.
I'm sure someone screwed him. Like, no, let me take that. Don't worry about it. I'm gonna charge these guys $3 to get in and watch this thing. You go paint somewhere else. I'm sure that was happening in the olden days.
Yeah. That's the birth of the first agent, right?
Yeah, there's a person. I got you. I'm gonna charge three rocks. You're gonna get two pebbles. I'm gonna have $3. You're gonna get two pebbles off the deal. Just keep being an artist, and I'll take care of you. You'll have plenty of mammoth meat for you to eat.
Predatory caveman deals.
Oh, predatory caveman deals. You know they were out there. There's no question. So I'm going to ask you a few questions to ask all my guests.
Sure.
What advice would you give a filmmaker wanting to break into the business today?
Okay. The first thing I would say is today is the best time to be a filmmaker. I mean, when you and I were coming up, that's when there were only lottery tickets, right? That's Robert Rodriguez, all that stuff was happening. But now the tech is there. You can make things with your phone. More importantly, and I think this is the biggest piece of advice, because I think a lot of people are grabbing their phones and doing things. But I don't think enough young filmmakers or people wanting to become filmmakers are spending their time to learn their craft and pay homage to the people. Like, I mean, there's basics that don't go away. Like, I'm sorry, but like, know your line, know your 3-point lighting. I mean, know your basic things that I think are getting a little lost, and then throw it away
once you learn it.
Because I think that young people today are harnessing tech. Everybody's an editor. Everybody's a shooter. But if they just take that extra step to really – and you don't have to go to film school. Hell, everything's available on YouTube now. Everything's available with the courses like you offer and Indie Film Hustle TV. It's all there. You have everything at your fingertips. So use those.
Can you imagine – I didn't mean to cut you off. But can you imagine having like something like Indie Film Hustle TV in the 90s?
Dude, I say it all the time.
Like, could you imagine? I would have killed for something like that.
I would used to go to the library and I would buy every book they had, and there wasn't that many. And I'm like, they have a screenplay of Pulp Fiction. I'm just going to read this. I mean, there was like, I would consume anything. I was reading textbooks before the class happened, you know? And so now everything's available. I do think some of that's getting taken for granted, but that's just a overall thing. That's not just.
I did laser discs. That's how I got my director commentaries before DVDs.
Same. I just talked about that the other day. That director's commentary could, because my school honestly kind of blew for filmmaking. They weren't even digital yet. I mean, I was reel to reel and two VCRs hooked together. I mean,
bad.
And so I had to take matters in my own hands and to have that. And then the beginnings of the internet. So there's hardly anything there, you know, so I would have loved that, dude. I mean, to have what you know, but that's the classic story, right? To have what you know today, like back then, you know, you'd be dangerous.
So I just want to date us a little bit more because we are of a similar vintages. I would literally hunt for special, like on when it was VHS, hunt for those making of tapes. Like they had Movie Magic was a show.
Oh, I love Movie Magic.
Remember Movie Magic? Like, that was, like they broke down T2 and they break down Jurassic Park and and of course the Star Wars and the Raiders of the Lost Ark making of VHS as I would get. But that would be, there wasn't anything. There was just no information out there. Where now we have a dilution, just so much information.
Yeah, my first, going way back to early childhood, I feel like when I first started getting interested in filmmaking was at a super young age when we had like bootleg HBO, and they would show you how they made their HBO sequence where the HBO comes flying in, and they would just try to fill time with these making of featurettes. And I was just like floored. And I mean, this is like 5, 6 years old. And I would just sit there and watch that stuff. And I think it just stuck, you know, always fascinated with that.
It was, anytime a making of would come on HBO, you were obviously in a rich family because I had no HBO. I had to steal it. you bootlegged it too. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Thank you. I didn't want to get a little too foo-foo here. I just wanted to make sure that your street cred was intact, sir.
I had a guy.
We all had a guy who split the HBO feed to your house for like $75 a day. He'll hook you up with HBO for the year.
Yeah. Everybody did. It must have been so easy back then because it was coming on a click, click. You got it. You got HBO.
Oh, it was just like literally I saw the guy. He's just a splitter. He just boop, boop, boop. All right. What do you want? Which one do you want? The HBO Showtime? It was like Movie Channel. I remember the Movie Channel.
Movie Channel, yeah, then. This was way early. it was called Home Box Office back then.
and Fraggle Rock. And Fraggle Rock was still on.
Love Fraggle Rock. Loved it. Oh, wow. We're going way back now. Not necessarily. No.
The nostalgia train is coming, my friend.
Man. Awesome.
So what is the lesson that took you the longest to learn, whether in the film business or in life? That goes to both of you.
Okay.
Gosh. For me, it was in both the film, especially, you know, working with my husband, is not to take everything so personal because I am an emotional person. So just feedback, you know, like, I want to cry because you're hurting my feelings, but it had absolutely nothing to do with me. It was literally the work, the client, or, you know, whatever. It's take a step back and just process it in real time and don't get too emotional.
That's actually really great advice. I had another guest say that the other day. So like, just don't take it personal.
Yeah. And I would say that too, because when she came in, I was already 20 years in the industry. So I had like work me. I talk fast. And I'm to the point. That doesn't mean I'm mad at
you. Straight to the point. Right to the point.
No time. Yeah. Yeah.
There's that thing with when you work with your spouse that you just like, like the same way. I'm just like, I need it's just like, there's no, honey, can you do the, there's none of that in production.
No coddling.
There's no crying in baseball. There is no crying in filmmaking.
That's true.
And three of your favorite films of all time.
All right. Okay, I'll rattle one off. Okay, so for me, I'll give you a narrative, and then I'll give you two docs. And then I think you have a couple too, right? So narrative, I have to go with Boogie Nights.
Yeah, of course.
I'll tell you why, because to me, that movie is just a classic. I mean, every scene is classic. Every character is perfect, and they all – it's the biggest ensemble cast. I mean, you take out what it's about, although it is about filmmaking, which I thought was cool.
Sketchy. Remember the film? They're like, I make films. I don't make videotape. Like, he would refuse to shoot porn on VHS. Like, it's on
tape. There's shadows in life, okay? There's shadows in life. But, yeah, it's just a classic, and, I mean, I can't watch it. Like, it's one of those ones that – every scene is my favorite scene, you know?
Got it.
So documentary, I'll tell you this, and this was super influential for me. What you were saying about making of was Heart of Darkness.
Such a good movie.
So it's the behind the scenes. I think that was the first time I actually saw a behind the scenes that was actually a film in itself. And it was just so influential for me. And A Thin Blue Line, just because it showed me that there was other ways to do a doc. And that was a crime doc. And at that point, to me, reenactments is a bad word, right? And they showed you how to do it right.
So that was pre-Tiger King.
Yeah, but that was like 1990s or so.
Just, yeah, it was mid-90s, yeah. And how about you? How about you, Margie?
Well, one of my new ones that I enjoy, I'd never watched before. I just watched it during COVID. Was Godfather.
Wow.
No, I wasn't allowed to go to the movie theaters. I wasn't allowed to watch a lot of different movies when I was growing up. So I've actually learned a lot with Bob in not only filmmaking, but just the appreciation of the films. Yeah, so with The Godfather in the first part of the movie, the wedding scene, and it's just like you introduction to so many different people. It was huge. It was huge for me.
My wife still hasn't seen The Godfather. I have to get. Yeah, she still hasn't seen The Godfather. I'm sorry. I got her to see six Star Wars films, and she like now refuses to watch any more Star Wars films. She's not a sci-fi. She doesn't like sci-fi. She doesn't like.
I know.
Which one?
Prequels.
You should have started with the originals.
Actually, you know what it was, and I did show her the originals, but then I showed her the prequels, and she's like, "Anakin's just this whiny bitch. Like he's just such a whiny little like goth bitch." I'm like, "Yeah, I know. Yeah, I shouldn't. That's on me." That's on me. But she did enjoy the first three. She did enjoy the first three, the four, five, and six. And then where can people find you and your films?
Sure. All right. So as far as my handle, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It's Bob Rose TV. And same thing, the handles for Instaban is Instaban Movie on all platforms. Including the website. And then we have a new film that we're just starting now about arcade bars. It's Token Taverns. So if you're into beer and video games, Token Taverns on any platform.
Very cool. And then I'm assuming it's a little easier to get a hold of them now because there's not a lot of traffic in them right now. Unfortunately. But thank you guys so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. It has been eye-opening. I hope people listening take the lessons from the music industry and Instaban, and everyone should definitely watch it to learn how to hustle in a post-COVID world as a filmmaker. I think it's going to have a lot of lessons. So thank you again, my friend. I appreciate it, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us on, man. We really appreciate it.
I want to thank Bob and Margie for coming on the show and sharing those knowledge bombs with the tribe today. As I said in my book, Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, and as I've been saying for years now, the game is changing, ladies and gentlemen, and if we do not change with it, we will not be able to play the game anymore. You want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to watch Instaban, head over to the show notes at indiefilmhustle.com/405. And guys, I also wanted to give you an update on my new film distribution course, which is now going to be entitled The Film Distribution Blueprint. All the early adopters to the beta version of the course have been helping me out a lot, giving me a lot of feedback on the course and helping me build out easily the most comprehensive course on film distribution on the planet and completely updated to today's world. And I will continue to update it as we move forward because, as you know, the film distribution landscape is changing constantly. So I will be updating and keeping this course as up to date as possible as we learn new techniques, new information, new platforms, new ways to make money with your film. So if you want to get in on the beta version, which will be closing in 2 weeks, I will close the beta version. And the next time it comes out, it will be only at the regular price. So if you want to get in on the beta version now, head over to indiefilmhustle.com/letmein. Thank you guys for listening. As always, keep that hustle going. Keep that dream alive. Wakanda forever. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Indie Film Hustle podcast at IndieFilmHustle.com. That's IndieFilmHustle.com.